Do you ever catch yourself saying, English is just crazy? Maybe your students come across a tricky word and you tell them, you just have to memorize that one, or this is the part you have to know by heart. But deep down, you know it's still confusing. Here's the truth. English isn't random. It's a wonderfully complex system, and once you understand how that system works, through sound, structure, and meaning, everything changes. That's what Sarah Paul and I teach inside Mastering Morphology. This isn't another curriculum. It's deep teacher knowledge inside a practical comprehensive course that finally shows you how words really work. No more exceptions, no more gimmicks or patching holes with memorization or phonics alone. It's time to go beyond sound it out and give your students the framework they need to truly understand words. So if you're ready to stop guessing and start teaching with confidence, join us inside Mastering Morphology. Enrollment is open now, so we invite you to click the link in the show notes to get started. You're listening to episode 65 of Literacy in Color. October is Dyslexia Awareness Month, and we are wrapping up our bonus series with an episode targeted around supporting our dyslexic learners with online tutoring instruction. Today, we're joined by Michelle Breitenbach, founder of Read to Rewire. She's a certified dyslexia practitioner, online tutor, and passionate advocate for structured literacy instruction. After leaving the classroom due to health challenges, Michelle transformed her teaching career by creating engaging, multi-sensory, virtual sessions that support students with dyslexia all around the world. Through her work, she empowers both educators and families to make online learning effective, personal, and full of connection. Welcome to the Literacy in Color podcast. I'm your host, Michelle Sullivan, a science of reading advocate with over a decade of experience as a reading interventionist and literacy coach. I'm passionate about making evidence-based instruction both effective and engaging. If you're interested in captivating our learners on reading fluently and understanding language, or as I like to call it, keeping it colorful, then you've found the right place. Each week, we'll explore intriguing lit bits and practical strategies around the science of reading and structured literacy to help you be colorful and teach colorfully. Are you ready to bring literacy to life? Let's color outside the lines and make an impact together. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Literacy in Color. We are in for a real treat with Michelle Breitenbach today from Read to Rewire. We are finishing up our bonus series this month in October. Every Friday, there's been a bonus episode for Dyslexia Awareness Month. And today happens to be Halloween. I mean, we're recording at the end of summer, but trick or treat, because Michelle is here to chat all about how we can serve our students with dyslexia with high-quality virtual tutoring support. So welcome to the show, Michelle, another fellow Michelle.
Hello, Michelle. How are you, my friend?
So good. So can you briefly introduce yourself and just share how you became so passionate about supporting students with dyslexia through online instruction?
Yeah, real quickly, it was 10 years ago that I was setting up my classroom like everybody else and making sure my bulletin board pieces were straight. And then I didn't know by October 2015, that same year, that the community of 30 years that I thought I was going to be part of, I couldn't be part of anymore. I started losing my speech with hemiplegic migraines, and I had to say goodbye to the classroom. And I was very blessed. I was in a school that even in 2009, we had floor-to-ceiling science of reading materials. I was told that I had to be a certified dyslexia practitioner because they were paying for it, because they were giving me the student, because it was on school time, and I was not going to be considered tenure unless I got that certification. And that certification set off quite the passion. I had to leave my special education position overnight. I came to Miami on a little getaway from the winter in Boston, because I was one of the top five public school districts in Massachusetts. And then disability denied me because I got on a plane. So I started tutoring around Miami, but I wasn't driving. So I was paying for Ubers and I was clearing about $30 an hour as a dyslexia tutor. And this little boy, Wiggly Jack, came into my life, and there was a big homeschool population here, even in 2015. So Wiggly Jack came into my life in 2018, and I was homeschooling 5 days a week. And by that time, I had raised my rates to $100 an hour. So when Wiggly Jack's mom came to me and said, "We're moving to LA," I was like, "Oh my God." As a tutor who was just finally feeling stable, nearly 4 years out of teaching, that was like a panicky moment. And then when they were in LA, they called me and they said, "We can't find a teacher that he loves as much as you. Can you do this online?" I was like, yeah, I can. And that was like a little bit like early winter 2019. And the reality was, Michelle, I could not teach online. I could not. Wiggly Jack's finger approached and shut me off. Wiggly Jack scribbled all over my screen. Wiggly Jack hid under the desk. I'm sure you know these stories, right? But Wiggly Jack was my best under 4 feet tall teacher. And then I had a couple clients that had to do vacations during the summer. So we went online, all dyslexic students. And then basically I shared that this is something that I do in a very focused Facebook group. And someone from Macedonia reached out to me on February 28th, 2020 and said, "I'm the only dyslexic practitioner in Macedonia within 100 miles and I'm in American International School and I need help." And my dog had passed away 2 weeks into the pandemic and I helped her for free. And then I had started doing like little $10 webinars and making games every week for teachers during, like, to take the stress down and give little tips during the pandemic. And yeah, I had become really, really good thanks to Wiggly Jack and Juliet, who picked up peanut butter off the floor with her toe and ate it in the screen. They all made me a really good teacher of online, so that when I saw people come into this and in such a disarray, I always like describe it as if it's like the Super Bowl and people are against the Patriots when they're like in the top of their ranking and Brady's going for the fourth ring and they're like sending the teachers and they never picked up a football and they don't know the coach. They never had a coach. They don't know the sideline mean. They don't know what the word, like any of the lines on the field mean. They don't know about punting, nothing. And like, now go beat Brady. And that's really what was set up for the pandemic. Online teaching is not something that should be learned overnight. Online teaching is not something that should be beyond a very small group, preferably one-on-one. I don't think of that as online teaching. It boils my brain when I hear that schools are still doing online teaching just to not have a snow day. But yeah, I became really passionate. I helped American International families that were undercover agents in the government in Germany, and I zoomed in with them. I kept kids from being kicked out of their private schools. I zoomed in with them at 8 a.m. so they could get their structured literacy and dyslexia intervention while their brain was fresh, but also so they didn't have to leave their special school. I zoomed into a public school last year with one of my middle schoolers because he had so many extracurriculars and his brain was better at 2 p.m. So I'm blessed. And I've helped probably thousands. I don't know. You never know how many people you help, right? Like that's what that's so special about social media and connections and all that. So yeah, I've helped quite a bit. And then I really became passionate about it. And now I help teachers leave schools and set up their own online businesses while maintaining multi-sensory methods and getting behavioral strategies and things like that so that you are super successful online and you really stand out as an expert instead of someone who fumbles.
You've seen all the highs and lows. And I would say I'm so sorry for your health journey and everything you had to go through at that point. But at the same time, that low has led you to such an incredible high right now and making such a profound impact in this world for teachers and kids all over globally. Wow, it's really impactful.
Aww, and thank you.
Yeah, and you truly are a dyslexia expert. Can you share a little bit about the prevalence of dyslexia and maybe what our listeners should understand when it comes to kids with dyslexia?
Yeah, I mean, just to run down a few percentages, right? one in five kids have dyslexia. This is one that we're usually commonly aware, but we also have a predicted 5 million people that are homeschooling their children for their various reasons, but definitely because some kids are neurodivergent that they've decided to homeschool. They're struggling readers. They're not getting the special ed support that they need. 66% of our entrepreneurs are dyslexic. 8 out of 10 of our sharks from the Shark Tank are dyslexic. Between 40 to 50% of the prisoners are dyslexic. So that shows the difference between who's getting the support and who's not and what's happening. And then on top of that, dyslexia is something that I don't want to say that I know this, but from experience, the majority of kids are not finding out they're dyslexic until third grade. And by that time, the confidence has been affected. The parents are confused. And I think that one thing that a lot of people overlook with dyslexia is, first of all, these kids are brilliant. They are the highest level of intelligence. They are known as the only population that's going to beat out AI. They are out-of-the-box thinkers and beautiful kids to work with. And they think of something and a solution to a problem that you and I could sit for 3 years and we could not do it ourselves. And they think about it in like 2 seconds. And they're not getting the support they need. We shouldn't be finding this out in third grade. We shouldn't have cities and states that are not even allowed to say, teachers aren't allowed to say dyslexia within the classroom. There's a lot of misinformation and there's a lot of lack of support. And the reality of it is there actually are not enough practitioners in the world to support the percentages of people with dyslexia.
I love how you spoke to not only the challenge, but also the exceptionalities, like how brilliant some of these children are. And we think about some of the comorbidities. I always have trouble saying that word.
Yeah, no, you're good.
ADHD might be one of them, but then being gifted might be one of them as well.
Well, that's usually the combined type. They're usually diagnosed with ADHD as well as a very high IQ with processing skills. So if they get the support they need and their brain is essentially rewired, then they have a chance of being a shark, right? If they don't get the support they need and they just keep getting tossed by the system, or they never find that tutor that is the right person with the right training, the other direction could potentially happen. That's 20% of our population. So that's really sad statistics.
So it just goes to show how important that early intervention really is. So when it comes to teaching students with dyslexia, what are maybe some of the non-negotiables when it comes to literacy instruction?
Sequential, structured, multisensory, engaging, because they're going to get bored easily. You need to have strategies for the wiggly ones, because if they're combined type, which most of them are, they just need a different way of learning. They really do. They need a different way of learning. And really, in terms of the instruction, obviously we categorize that under Ort and Gillingham strategies, but there's a lot of programs within that and a lot of teacher pay teacher friends, wink, wink, that are supporting kids with dyslexia as well with really fun and engaging resources. And that's the kind of teaching they need. And that's why I'm really passionate about online teaching to reach these kids, because sometimes what I see a lot of teachers do, everyone can take what I say with a grain of salt, but I'm old school and I want my lessons to feel like the in-person experience. And I want my students to be using those tactile resources and I want them to be moving the magnetic letters around the tile board. I do not want them, and control purposes and for engagement purposes and all that, I don't want them on what I call kind of the virtual highway, where a lot of teachers that are online go right to a website, right to a YouTube video, right? And you're in a one-on-one situation if this is the kind of instruction you're doing. And it really is a space where we shouldn't be handing off to computer-based places. That's just my opinion. I understand it when it's a classroom of 20, totally understand that. But even in a classroom of 20, the kids, if they're doing the intervention the right way. And then I think we also have to remember that it's not just dyslexic kids that should be getting this kind of instruction. It's all kids, because it's based on science and it's based on how the brain learns to read. And it also has to be connected to spelling as well. I would like to say that every school is doing it right. More of them are doing it wrong, which is a very sad, very sad.
Yeah, I know. Our literacy statistics aren't looking so good these days. When I look at the people around me doing good work in the world, I really am hopeful that things can change. And that's why the work that you do is so important too. And I appreciate how you were talking about being old school with technology, because I think a lot of people might assume that that's not possible. And then there's this common misconception that online learning might be less than because it has not this face-to-face component. But it sounds like your approach to things is so different than so many out there. So can you talk about what makes online instruction really impactful for students with dyslexia?
Well, again, because most of our students with dyslexia are combined ADHD type or do tend to get bored easily, whatever you do in your lesson is not going to compare to their Minecraft or Roblox. And the sooner you realize that, the sooner you realize that you need to adapt your lesson based on how they're the out-of-the-box thinkers and they need the lesson adapted. So, for example, I was just having a conversation with someone who's like, how can you have a lesson that's longer than 30 minutes with a five-year-old? I'm like, my lessons are 60 minutes. Every online lesson, 60 minutes. Like, well, how do you do that? Honestly, 90% of my lesson is just video. 90% of my lesson is on a video, especially with the little ones. I'm holding up a card holder in the video to tap out sounds. If they're in their bedroom, I'm having them go grab a stuffed animal and let's hop our sounds. They have their magnetic letter board. They're writing with a pencil. They are not writing on the screen. And the other part of that is you stay in control of your lesson. What winds up happening when we go to what I call the virtual highway is you're giving up control of your lesson. And the other part of this is we have to consider if this is tutoring or teaching online where you're supporting a school or whether you're supporting a parent or individual. Especially when you're looking at what a parent wants for their child and how you're going to engage with that child, because a parent's going to be very close if you're online, P.S., right? They're not going to be far away, or they're going to be watching you from a nanny cam, and whatever parent's listening, you know you would do the same thing. You want to get online and shine, and you want to make that connection with a student, and you certainly don't want the first thing to do is like share a screen and put a video like the size of an old film strip crew, because they cannot see how excited you are to work with them. And you cannot see if they are tired, if they are sad, if they are confused. There's much more to this than not just multisensory teaching. Like, multisensory teaching is important, but it's more the connection. It's the connection. It's having behavioral strategies. It's knowing how to engage. And because a parent is watching, you really need to be in control and keeping these kids from saying the B word, which I feel is a swear word in my Zoom room, and making sure that your student is not sliding under the desk because they're bored or they're tired or whatever. The way that I explain it is online teaching is a skill. My parents said, oh, Michelle, you need to learn how to swim. So we're going to give you swim lessons. I'm like, great, I know how to swim. To this day, I can swim like a frog. But if you told me to jump off a diving board every single time, I'm belly flopping. Online teaching is a skill. You have to do it really well, and you have to learn how to do it really well. And the way that people were thrown into it from the pandemic, they didn't have time to do that. They didn't have their wiggly jacks for 9 months to say, he never said you're really bad at this. But all of those actions, all of those interactions together told me I was terrible at what I was doing, and I better start changing things. And all of his interactions with me, the negative interactions, were saying, hey, I used to love what we did at my house. I loved that. I loved when you came to my house. I loved when we played games like that. I loved all of that. But you're not doing any of it. You're taking me to Go Noodle where it freezes. No offense to Go Noodle. It's a great place. You're in a one-on-one situation. Guess what? None of my new students know Go Noodle is out there. Because what they don't miss, right? I think that where I see online teaching is these big, just like we have our big curriculum companies come in and take over the reading space, and we're not big fans of those. I feel like a lot of companies have come in and tried to make this a virtual a completely virtual space and taken away the human connection. And as we're moving closer and closer to more technology, yeah, there's going to be kids that thrive there. But there's also going to be the teacher. You guys are it. You are the unicorns. You are the ones with the skills. You are the ones that the parents want their child to be connected to. The parents' fear is, from a perspective of a private tutor, is their child goes from an active board to iReady to an iPad. Online has to be different or it's not going to be a yes. They need to see it. And then what pandemic did is introduce the world to online teaching in the worst possible way. And that's something that's we're going to be carried, just like the marathon bombing or 9/11. Like, it is something that till 80, we're going to be talking about online teaching during the pandemic ruined the socialization of all kids. That's not online teaching. Real online teaching is a one-on-one setting, maintaining multi-sensory methods, being able to tell a parent on the phone before you accept a job that I replicate the in-person experience. It doesn't look different. Just there's just a screen between, and that's good for virtual sneezes. So I'm super passionate about this.
Yeah, I can tell your passion is electric. I love it. I love how you speak about the human connection, because I think that is the biggest piece of the puzzle. There's so many even schools who purchase these intervention programs on the computer and just go sit on it for 20 minutes. But we need that face-to-face interaction and real-time responding to kids with real-time feedback and in-the-moment experience there. And even with my platform, Colorful Classroom, I have an acronym, Captivating Our Learners on Reading Fluently and Understanding Language. And, you know, everything's in the captivate. We need to captivate our students. It's structured literacy.
Yeah.
That's so important to engage your students from the get-go, whether you have a screen between you or not. And so I love your whole messaging behind that and how you support teachers to really hone in on that skill to be able to support their learners online.
A lot of people have come from the fear, both parents and tutors, come the fears like, I could never do this online because I can't have the same relationship as the child. Are you saving time to build that relationship? So at the end of every one of my lessons, it's kind of a time saver too, so I can book back-to-back clients. But my parents know that I'm doing a 55-minute lesson. And the 5 minutes at the end are share. And I've met grandpa and I've met dogs and I saw grandma's button collection and I saw what Elf on the Shelf did, how someone got hopscotch in their house and Elf on the Shelf did it. And that is that real life connection. And that's where parents don't want you to just get online with their students. They want you to get online, shine, connect. I have one of my clients that left schools and is now pregnant. She's in Albuquerque. Her client is in Canada. She got a text from her client. This is for anybody who says, I can't have the same relationship with someone that I've never met. I need to have that in-person experience. She got a text from her client in Canada that said, I wanted to tell you this when I was putting so-and-so to bed the other night. She said, I love Casey. Casey is like my auntie. These families, these appreciative families, to be in this one-on-one. We never get to be with a kid one-on-one. I was a special educator, ran a learning center with 5 kids, all wiggles. Two dyslexic practitioners on the other side telling me to be quiet with my wiggly group and being like, I think I got 3 of them today. 2 of them I'll get next time. That's the reality of it. So you are literally blessed to be in a one-on-one situation with a child. And it should be a lesson that is facilitated the right way. And I want people to flip their brains and say, instead of where can I go find my lesson, what can I have in place that I already love to teach with? Because my students are going to love it. And then I'm going to end with a share and I'm going to build on that connection.
There are so many benefits to that one-on-one uninterrupted time. And then I know you mentioned there's other benefits for families too, even aside from the learning challenges.
Yeah. So you're in New Jersey, Michelle, right?
Yeah.
Do you want to drive your student in the snow to their tutoring lesson and put their mittens on and bundle up their coat? Or would you rather them be in their jammies on a Saturday popping on the computer real quickly with someone, right?
Yeah.
We have tons of kids that need these kind of services and they're in extracurriculars and they might not be able to do extracurriculars because they need 3 days of tutoring. and there's an opportunity to, like, for example, I have people on the East Coast Zooming with people in Pacific Coast and giving students that time in the morning when their brain is fresh and their parents are like, just entertain them, please. I need to pack the lunches. I need to pack the lunches. So I look at intervention, whether it's East Coast to Pacific Coast or whether it is there's a little Catholic school, there's parents that have paid for private schools and they don't have the interventionists on site. So I've been able to be paid by a parent and then the school sets the kids up. Now, I saw this beautiful movie, Hopeville. It was beautiful. It was at an event and a private school teacher stood up. And it was a dyslexic school being represented and the private school teacher stood up and said, we sent 8 kids to your school. We are so grateful for you. Now, the problem with that, that's great, but you're not thinking about the impact of the child's family and the child. Okay, I have to say goodbye to my friends. I have to say goodbye to maybe my siblings still at that school. I have to say goodbye to my teachers that I loved. I might need to say goodbye to my school sports that I'm involved in, to my school after school things. And not only that, but as a family, there might be a sibling over there and 45 minutes later, they have to be driven to the other school. And that maybe that school's doing a really great job, but really all we needed to do was zoom an expert into the private school and the private school that the parents picked out when the child was in kindergarten instead of the child getting kicked out of a school basically in second grade. And you can zoom in at 8 in the morning when a child's brain is fresh. And that I just get chills and feelings in my stomach when I think about that because that's my vision. That's my vision is that wherever we are, public school, whatever, if you don't have an interventionist on site, we can get one in. We can get one in. Tutors and kids at 6 o'clock at night doing a lesson, whether it's in person or online, it's not an ideal time to work with a child. It's not. Their brain is done, especially a child with dyslexia who literally has put in 360% more than every single other kid in that classroom. And now you're like, okay, you hated your day at school. Now you're going to go sit down in front of the computer. Now you're going to sit down next to your tutor who's coming to the house. And I'm going to be cooking dinner while you're trying to do it. And their brain is fried. And I'm not saying that that definitely should happen because we need to have the tutoring intervention. But I think that there's a better model here. We also have kids in the government that literally their parents are serving undercover in the government. And their child has an IEP from the U.S. And their special educator has never heard of Orton Gillingham. I've talked to a family, was told to move their house 8 hours to get to their dyslexic school. I used to have someone in the Keys who used to drive 2 hours to me, took their kids out of school. Now, tutor closed the computer into the pool. So these are the sides of online teaching that are not being recognized for the benefit of the family, for the benefit of the student. When someone goes to their summer house, I travel with them. My clients as well, they travel with their kids. What's being overlooked is what I shared in July 2020, which most people are probably like, you be crazy. And then doing a dancing remix by November, which is thank you online teachers. Because imagine if 14 million kids got access to a practitioner overnight and they're in all different places. Do you think a child in an underprivileged school will ever have access to an amazing educator? Not where there's no funding. I have big, beautiful dreams, Michelle. I'm going to be Zooming people all over this world.
You got to send them on over with the Zoom room. I know.
The Zoom room is a good place. It's a good place. Take away the pandemic PTSD. Moms, dads, teachers, take away the pandemic PTSD.
And how practical it can be for families and the flexibility. I think about the day-to-day and just like, I have 2 daughters and the day-to-day hustle of laundry and cooking and running to the grocery store and how many things and when there's extra activities, how stressful that can be. So to make just life as simple as humanly possible, I think is such a blessing. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. And I mean, that's on the family side, right? And then you have these beautiful unicorn teachers that have this skill set. Don't tell anybody, but I'm helping them get out of the classroom. And they're doing 200 hours, 50-hour weeks with, I'm sure you remember these kind of days. They're doing 50-hour weeks. They're working 200 hours a month. And I do tell people to stand firm in their rates because they can get down to 10 to 15-hour weeks and they can put their laundry in before they get online and they can make $500 during nap time and they can put something in a crock pot and they can fold the laundry after the third lesson and their weekend can start on a Thursday. And at the same time, they're giving access to these beautiful families. So they're feeling like a level of appreciation. I had one of my clients celebrated today that she joined the school board. So we know this time is a luxury. And these teachers, they set themselves up and they're supporting these amazing families. And then they're volunteering and they're volunteering at their local library or they're volunteering for people that can't afford their services. The people in my group were the first ones to volunteer when we talked about the LA fires. They're like, nope, I'll do it for free. I'll do it for free.
Amazing. When good people have more time on their hands, they're able to do more good in the world.
Exactly. It falls with the same with money. Good people with money do good things, right?
Yeah, 100%.
So, and then they have their energy back. Like when I work with people, one of their first wins is like working out.
Self-care.
Here you go, self-care. We're told, you guys are told to do it in classrooms all year, all day, but you're not given the time to do it. Self-care, but here's your special ed eval. We have that meeting on Friday.
It's so true. I know. It's like we need to hone in on all aspects of ourselves for our kids. And it just feels like the constant struggle bus.
You know, I had webinars this summer and I asked how they're operating. And I expected them to say, oh, I'm doing great. I'm hanging out by the beach. I'm doing this. I'm doing that. No. You know what I got? And mostly in the chat, anxious, scared. And they hadn't even gotten the first email about going back to school. So we're seeing two sides of a very big problem. We're seeing overworked and undertrained teachers, and we're seeing kids that are not getting access to the right people. So I know that it can't be cured overnight, but I think there's little things that you have to choose what life is, what's going to be better for your child. You have to choose what's going to be better for you as an expert.
100%. Two sides of the coin for sure. So when we're thinking about our students with dyslexia, I know you are the queen of engagement. So what are maybe two or three of your go-to strategies for keeping them engaged during your virtual lessons?
These are going to sound so simple and silly, right? But I know you teachers, I know you are gatherers and hunters and you have baskets of stuff. It's in the video. This is going to sound so silly. Go get your stickers. Okay. Like the stickers. Imagine if you had fall stickers right now and you have a sticker with an apple basket and you have a sticker with an apple tree and you have a sticker with, oh no, a leaf, right? So I will actually have the sheet of stickers and I'll have the students pick which ones they want, which sticker they want. And I put it literally on the word card and I hide it in like an apple basket. But I'll also ask them, what do you want to do when you get the leaf sticker? What do you want to do when you get the apple in the basket sticker? What do you want to do when you get the tree sticker, right? And these kids, because they're out of the box thinkers, that's what they want. They want choice. They want to play with you. They want to see you lively to play. If we go on preconceived and technology spaces that are already giving the kids the rules, it can work better sometimes for some kids to be able to be part of those rules. And they come up with amazing things. So like you show the apple basket, okay, we're going to be picking apples. We're going to go side to side. I was like, okay, we're going to count to 10. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Come back. We'll do it again. But I'm standing on the screen. I'm doing it with them. Okay, now comes the tree. Oh, we're picking the apples. And they'll think of these things. I don't have to. I'll just be like, let's do jumping jacks. Like, because that's where my brain is, right? We're picking apples. Okay, let's pick our apples. 1, and we do 10. I always say 10 and then come back to it again. And then the leaf. Okay, we're going to rake leaves. Ready? 1, 2, 3, 4, and switch sides. So you're building in movement. You're getting the heart rate elevated. You're bringing the brain fresh. I usually front load it at the start of the lesson so that fun component is built in, but it's always tied to what I'm doing. So whenever I'm doing something, games or engagement, it is going to be tied to the lesson I'm already doing. I'm not taking them somewhere where trying to convince them to come back. Oh yeah, now come back and do your phonics. No, they don't want to. They're like, no, I want to stay in roadblock land, right? There's a student I had, and I used to just do very big, like calisthenics and all that, right? And there's a student I had, and I had like a Valentine's Day sheet, right? A sheet of Valentine's Day stickers. And I was like, okay. And I made the rules. I was like, no, Michelle, let me make the rules. And it was like a 7 o'clock student. Like, she was in the Midwest. She was so sweet. And I'm like hyper, as you can tell, right? So I'm like on caffeine or whatever. And she's like, I'm going to make the rules. I'm like, okay. When we get the Cupid sticker, we're going to pull the bow back. And I'm like, dang, that feels really good. As a back row, like writing that down, give credit to this student when I write my book, right? And then she's like, when we get the heart sticker, we're going to put a heart over our head, like a little like heart, like in when the screen, and go into tree pose. That's what I'm saying. These kids need the opportunity to use their creative thinking, because you and I know that we could sit for 3 years and stare at those stickers and not think of something as cool as that. There's no way. I'm like, oh, heart, let's do jumping jacks. Like, let's give it easy. So I believe in choice and I believe in control. That whole thing is controlled by me. P.S. in the Zoom room, if you have a basket and it's below the Zoom screen, kids have no idea that you stack the deck and you can pick the sticker when you want the game to end. So like mine might be right over here and they have no idea. And I was like, oh my gosh, it's the last sticker. What are we going to do? So you have control, choice, and you're part of it. You're part of it. You need to be part of whatever you're doing with your students. Do you see how that's a different way of showing up than if you just bring a child to a preconceived game site?
Yeah.
Nothing like it, right? That's what we do in person. That's what Little Wiggly Jack and I did in person. So that's one of them. And then the other one is like, if you have a document camera, that's something that I think everyone should have as an online teacher. I would put like a board game.
I bought the Spin Swan years ago when you were showing yours. I was like, ooh, I want the one that Michelle has.
Well, how long have you been trailing me, Michelle? Yeah, so I think everyone should have a document camera, because that means anything that you already have in your house that you guys have been hunted and gathered, right? You can pop it right under the document camera. So my favorite thing is like a board game. Wait, how do you do a board game online? Well, I've seen people and what they do. They figure out how to make a Google Slide and they put the spinner on the Google Slide and then they have to use the remote control. I was like, oh my God, no, that's not me. Sorry. So like I literally put the board game down. P.S. You need to make it stay, because if you're wiggly like me, I'm going to throw the board game, going to go right off the desk. So you can either use this really technical thing called scotch tape or putty from a posters, right? So it's held in space, but you still have the 3D effect. And then what's left is, oh, just like Monopoly, I need game pieces. So now the students can use the Zoom stamps as their game piece with their Zoom tools. And then the last little piece is I need a dice. This is where I do go virtual. Super simple. I go to free online dice, free virtual dice. I go, okay, tell me when. Because we also know when we play in person in games, right? What do the kids do? Throw the dice across the room. Like, go get it. Tell me when it landed. So try to roll a dice on a document camera. That's not going to work. So then I have like a virtual dice. I'm engaged with them. I say, okay, tell me when. Round and round and round it goes. Where's that? I don't know. And then they go around the board game. And then what you can do is you can put any of your word cards, snippets by Sarah. I've used her sentence strips so that the student can scoop the sentence. They're playing a game. One of the sentence strips could have a sticker on it. The only game that I beg of people not to play with kids online and try to replicate the in-person experience, please don't play Go Fish online, okay? Give that game up. Give it up. Because if you can play many card games under the document camera, give up Go Fish. Because you cannot be like, okay, kids, you have the cards over there. Yep, I have my cards over here. Like, no, we're not playing that game. So I have a lot of games that, honestly, I've created with my kids. I also did games every single week during the pandemic, which I probably should bring back. You think I should bring them back, Michelle?
Yeah, definitely.
And then free during the pandemic every week. I loved it. It was so much fun. So I did have, like, the fall game. I made, like, the little cards with the apples, but you can do with stickers.
I mean, honestly, make your own with index cards.
There you go, right? Everybody has their own budget, so.
Yeah, simple. I love the simplicity, and you said in the beginning, old school.
Kiss it. Keep it super simple. Otherwise, you're going to overwhelm the families. You're going to be overwhelmed, and your kid is going to be disconnected, and that's not going to secure a job as a tutor And that's not going to also, if you are a teacher zooming into a school, it's not going to be a really successful experience. And that's where online goes wrong. Online goes wrong because you immediately give control and you immediately go to the virtual highway. And honestly, one of my favorite webinars to do during the pandemic was behavior.
No, it's so true. And even in the last school I coached in, I used to give the teachers the resources I made, but I would also in the same breath say, like, just give me a whiteboard and some paper. I could teach any kid to read with the simplest tools. And we don't always have to be overwhelmed with the gadgets. And I think when people think about online learning, they're like, I need slides and I need all this fancy stuff. And no, the truth is you really don't. And
you don't.
The simpler it is, the more effective it can be too. And some of that stuff's really stimulating too when you
it's really though too, it's like if you're trying to do this and it's based on a job, okay, just like a parent hiring an extracurricular coach, if they feel overwhelmed, if their kid feels overwhelmed, if the directions are not whatever, like they're not going to keep paying that high level sports coach. And so the parents can find you, hire you, pay you, but the kids can fire you. And no kid is going to fire me. No kid. Nobody's firing me. That's it. Sorry. I will pick apples all day before you fire me.
You're doing apple yoga. I love it. So what are some of your favorite materials? I know you talked about your document camera, but what are some of your other favorite materials maybe to keep the experience multisensory from behind a screen?
You would laugh. I have three. Okay. Like this is where everybody would laugh. Okay. The document camera, the Microsoft Surface Pro, put it on your list because just like a hairdresser invests in the best tools. A Microsoft Surface Pro.
With a stylus, right?
Yeah, that's so you can write on the screen so it's easier for you. I've had a lot of people ask me, should a kid have a document camera? And I have to, first of all, I will say I've been tutoring online since 2019, researching it since 2018, and I've never had a student use a document camera. To me, I think you really, an adult maybe, an older student maybe, and there might be different trains of thought, but I personally don't want to give a child another thing to play with because I like working with the wiggly ones. If you like working with more rule followers, then that might be a good thing for you. But also it gives the parents another thing to set up, another thing to worry about, another thing to lose. A lot of our kids that are going to come to you are going to have executive functioning difficulties as well, which means that might also be tied in with family stuff. So the less you give on the other side for the parents to manage, the better off you're going to be, because what they want from you is just like if you came to their house. They want to be able to go work with their second grader as you're with their first or kindergartner, right? But this is my other thing, okay? And Sarah knows about this. This is my card holder, and it's so silly. It's literally like, this is when you know you're a teacher. You're like, look at all the slats, right? You can just change really quickly, right? It has a lot of slats. It's really built for little grannies that can't hold their poker hand, you know, hand. I love it. That's called Yellow Mountain. It comes with two. So I know Sarah, shout out to Snippets by Sarah, because I know she's in love with pocket charts. And when I first started teaching online, because I'm a pocket chart girl from special ed, right? I'm like, how the heck am I going to get a pocket chart? This is going to be bad. And then I've seen people with easels, which is great. But as soon as you turn the screen, what happens is you lose the child. You've lost the best and worst staring contest of your life, right? So when you come right up to the screen, it's different. And then you could use one of them to hold your cards, whatever sound cards. These ones are Lively Letters by Nancy Tillian. And I love them too because they show what your mouth should be doing.
Oh, so cute.
So, you know, just like when we do mirrors, working with kids, well, we have a mirror now.
Yeah.
There's a lot of benefits that people overlook. It's okay, online teaching. It's not your fault. It's the world's. It's the pandemic's fault, but it's okay. It's not your fault. You're okay.
Yeah, definitely.
So those are my top three. Honestly, the card holder for a resource, I love the Lively Letters because it does with the mouth. I love Wilson Foundations and the Wilson program as well because I'm a Wilson certified practitioner. And then the Surface Pro. And honestly, a little secret. I like keeping my iPad close by because you don't know right now. You can't even tell what my hand's doing, but I'm preparing my lesson for the next day as I'm staying engaged with my kid. That when you get to the level of being that good at online, so actually lesson planning becomes easier because you can also add, like, by the way, when you leave teaching, you get a secretary, you can add like a note taker to your Zoom lesson. And then it's a lot easier to write lesson plans when they're recorded. So yeah,
because you see right in the moment, oh, they're still struggling with this sound.
Yeah. Or, and I can be like, tomorrow.
Yeah. 100%.
Get Michelle's game from teachers paid teachers.
So you told us about Wiggly Jack. Do you have any other really special success stories you want to share with working with Student with Dyslexia Online?
Yeah, I do. Juliet, she was my second student. And I worked with her first in person at her very loud Catholic school after school program. Juliet got into private school of her dreams. She's doing drama right now. I worked with her from second grade to fourth grade. And she's in a regular classroom. And I didn't have to be in Miami traffic to help her. And Noe, the one who took the virtual letterboard and scribbled all over it, one of the things that was really hard for him was when I showed up in person at 8 a.m. for his little Catholic school, I would knock on the door. And what do you think the kids inside said? No way, your special teacher's here. And then there's like a little window. And then we were working in like the little tiny cafeteria where they organize the snacks and stuff. So people walking in and out. But more importantly, Noe's confidence was kicked to the ground because he was in fourth grade and couldn't read three-letter nonsense words. So when he went to Paris and I worked with him all summer online, when we came back, it wasn't just my decision to work online. The parents were all for it because what happened was his confidence level went up. Nobody knew that a special teacher was working with him anymore. Nobody knew. I have Ian. Ian was in North Carolina. He couldn't read three-letter words. He wasn't Miami-based. He's always been North Carolina-based. His mom was amazing. He was amazing. Amazing, amazing kid. And he's the first public school child that I supported because he advocated for himself. He was in middle school and said, I don't want to go out with the six troublemakers. I don't want to be pulled from my classroom. It's six troublemakers. I'm not learning anything. Mom advocated, it was this time last year, to work with him. I said, just ask. The worst thing they can do is say no, but they're not providing the support that your child needs. So he advocated for himself. The mom advocated for him. And he also was the one who had a lot of extracurricular activities. And mom was a coach for some of them. And I just said, and he's tanked at 6 o'clock at night. Done. I Zoomed at 2. I mean, a lot, so many. I worked with a little girl who I worked with in person in Miami, and then she went to Ibiza, Spain. So they got to have that continuity of services. And then when they came back, we did a mixture of online and in person. She was fun. She showed up with seashells. Michelle, I collected seashells today. I'm like, okay, that will be your tapping tool. Lay all those three seashells out. Let's go, right? She was a big, big teacher. London, shout out to London. Shout out to big, big teacher. Yes, so many. So many.
Amazing, amazing stories. And it keeps you going. It helps you know that everything that you're doing is worth it.
Yeah. And I can say I'm very grateful for having hemiplegic migraines that made me leave my school in my 9th year as a public educator. I would never change anything for the world. Never. So very grateful. Yeah.
Amazing. So what small piece of advice or maybe big piece of advice do you have for educators who might be interested in supporting students online with dyslexia or any students, really?
Don't give up what you already love to do. Don't give up on what you already love to do. You have the materials. You have the training. You have a business in a computer waiting for you. Right now, I have people that I'm working with that are making $125 an hour. I know this is not about money, but this is also about teacher freedom and helping kids. They are adding $2,000 a month to their income with 4 hours of work from home. So my advice would be to, if you want to supplement your income, Well, I used to have to replace my teaching income by tutoring and going to everybody's houses in the middle of traffic. The kids are tired. It's after school. You get online, you say goodbye to traffic. You say goodbye to weather. You have the convenience to tutor, close the computer. You can use the bathroom when you want. I'd rather, honestly, Michelle, give advice to parents.
Go for it.
That are looking for online tutors or looking for some level of support and what they should be looking for. If they are searching for an online teacher, they should be looking for somebody that establishes a rapport from the beginning with their child. Because the next thing that they should do is do baseline data collection. And they're not going to get accurate baseline data collection if they have not spent at least one session building rapport and establishing behavioral expectations in a fun way. If a parent is listening and is like, oh, is this really good for my child? I would think of all the things your child is going through, all the things your child is going through, and how you can make it easier for you and your family. And there's a place that you don't have to drive anywhere to. There's a comfy home waiting for you. But your person needs to have control. And I don't think I have to be the one to tell them that. And it shouldn't look much different than if they came to your house. And they need to be having adequate training. But I would highly encourage parents who might not have been part of the pandemic or who might have just heard bad things or experienced bad things, but that's not online teaching. It's not. And I tell this to my teachers too, who are like, oh, I want a side hustle. I'm like, it's not a side hustle. A hustle, you know what a hustle is. You're on social media. A hustle is you're putting your hours into school. This is a gig. This is a comedic gig. Like, you, obviously it's not comedy, but this is what it should feel like. You should feel lit up. If you're a parent, your kids should be lit up. If you're a teacher, you should be getting off the screen lit up. Any other way that's happening where you're overwhelming or whatever, you're not doing it right. It should be really easy. And that's why I'm all about keep it super simple. And that we can reach and teach our 1 in 5. Progress happens one child at a time right now. There's too many distractions for kids. So I think it's a really beautiful way, if you do it right, to reach those kids that we don't have access to. And my message for teachers is that online teaching is not something you can just Google. It is a skill. And I'm very blessed that that skill was taught to me by these little under 4 feet tall, wiggly, out of the box thinkers, and that we learned together and we became better together. And we did become the team to beat Brady in the Super Bowl. No, I'm just joking. No, but we did. There's strategies involved. There's a structure. There's a framework. You cannot just be expected to teach online overnight. That's not how it works. If I failed with 3 students from January 2019 till fall, right? They were my big teachers. I just had really, really understanding parents. I don't know what they're like, you got a 15 minutes. Okay, we're good. I was so bad with Wiggly Jack that they had to hire a second nanny to sit next to them. So I encourage both sides to see the freedom-based instruction that's available here and to really improve your home life, your family life. To the teachers, it's a huge way to reclaim what you love to do, whether it is part-time or whether it is your exit out. And there's nothing better than jumping on your couch with your dog 30 seconds after getting offline. But you have to do it well. And it's a skill. Just like if you're taking salsa dancing, right? You take one class, are you an expert? Can you show up? And you know, a lot of people ask me, where do you find clients? I get that question like all the time, right? It's not about finding clients, because if you're online, you have an endless reach. And you heard the statistics I shared at the beginning.
Yeah.
It's not about finding clients. I can teach you how to find clients in about 10 minutes of talking to you, but it's about securing them, having the relationship, and the parents wanting you back over and over again, because you are the unicorn they've been looking for. You are the one that's saving them from all of the stress. These parents are coming to you with a bleeding problem that's impacting every single part of their day, their child's day. And that's where I stand in terms of helping a lot of these beautiful unicorns with the skills to help our dyslexic kids but they need the help on the other side. It's like, okay, how can I do it with joy? How can I do it with freedom? And yes, they want to use the bathroom and yes, they want to be next to the dog, but I've had people travel all around the world. I'm supporting people all around the world. I've had people like within 2 weeks of working with me, their lessons are online instead of driving in the snow. So I would encourage both sides to look at the benefits of it. And like I was the person in July 2020 being like, thank you, online teachers. I literally made a reel in like November 2020 as everyone's like hating on online teaching. And like, I can change the world. And I have like dyslexia in my hands like this. And then I'm pointing and I'm like pointing to statistics, all the bad statistics about dyslexia. And then on the other side, I'm like, thank you, online teachers. So I would say like, I'm a little bit of visionary here. And I think a lot of people can be helped and a lot of people are going to be helped. And the people that are going to be helped are the kids without access and the teachers that might not have an exit plan because they're in a community that they can't exit. And a four that online gives access. That's where I'll end it. Online gives access. And I want to reach and teach our 1 in 5.
Yeah, so special. And I so appreciate this conversation, leaning both ways and supporting parents understand the options available to them to support their students, but also supporting teachers to know that there's more out there for you too, if that's a path that you want to pursue. So beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing that.
Yeah, of course.
Where can listeners connect with you further if they're interested?
Yeah.
In learning more about all your offerings.
My bigger side of what I do is actually protecting teachers' health because I left teaching without a plan overnight. So I actually help dyslexia experts and Orton-Gillingham experts leave the classroom and set up their own online tutoring biz with minimal technology, even though they know that they don't know that that's what they need, but they do. And how to get online and shine and be elite online tutors and work 10 to 15 hour weeks and then give back to their communities. That's what a lot of, I don't tell them to do that. That's just time comes back. I have people that have been able to have kids. I have people that have been able to visit their grandchildren whenever they want. I have people that have been able to supplement their retirement income doing what they love and getting an early exit. I have people that, you know, in 1 week, I talked to 4 teachers that talked about kidney stones. I had my first expat crying. I cried. She didn't cry. She's like, I have to get my daughter out of this country to keep her safe. So there are a lot of teachers inside that are getting a lot like the help they need. So I support teachers on the business side because a lot of us, if we leave or if we're even setting up a side gig, we go teacher to tutor. And that's what I did. And for 4 years, I went around not understanding anything about business, not having consistency in income, not being able to charge my worth and not even knowing my worth, right? And not thinking about what extracurricular coaches, no hate on them. But I know that people think like we're giving the gift of reading, but I also want to remind listeners that have these skill sets, like you are the gift. You are the gift.
Yeah.
So I actually run a coaching program for teachers that want to reclaim their health and joy of teaching and do it without social media because that's a hustle. We don't want a hustle. We want a gig. And they, whether they're setting up a side hustle to have an exit plan for 1 to 3 years, or they're doing it to be home with their kids, or one of the benefits of online teaching that there's 2 benefits of online teaching that a lot of people are overlooking and they learn when they start following me or they come into my coaching room is number one, they can work before 4 o'clock. So teachers have been promised, a lot of teachers, and you probably know this, have been promised that their day is going to end at 3. And that's why they go into teaching so they can have kids and they can be home for them and they can take them to their extracurriculars, or I call them Uber moms. It shouldn't be derogatory. They call themselves that. But teachers, that promise never gets actualized. As I was a teacher, I was typing evals till 11 o'clock. I was tutoring till 7. And I didn't know that my body was slowly going to say this. You can't do this anymore. I just thought it's my 30s. I'm like, yeah, it's my 30s. Okay. You can't. My body's just like, no, you can't go back to teaching. So I've helped someone exit that had a husband with Alzheimer's and had to take care of her husband. And I know that people don't like to mix the gift of reading with money, But when you charge your worth, you are in a space to give back. You are in space for a bigger impact. You are in a space, even if that means just take care of your health, your family. It's your time. It's your self-care finally, right? And I think one of the things that a lot of people are seeing is with online teaching, like I've worked with someone in South Dakota that left school, like wanted to leave schools, but she was getting paid $35 an hour as a behavior specialist. She exited out of schools and she had a $100 an hour client in Brazil. She would not have been able to exit schools if she was restricted to helping people in South Dakota, but guaranteed she's probably helping people in South Dakota somehow because we're heart-led individuals. So I help people be business smart and then also get online and not just get through a lesson like the pandemic, but get online and shine and impress those parents and really hold on to those kids' hearts because that's where your job is secure. A little bit of a passion, tiny, tiny passion.
Yeah, just a tiny passion as Michelle has tears in her eyes.
I know. So, so it's Read, Rewire. And then my cohorts, it's called Online with Ease Academy. It's a 6-month program. It's the only thing I really offer because I'm so dedicated to this lovely, amazing group of teachers. And it's a place of hope. And it's a way that I feel grateful every day because my life has come full circle. I left teaching without a plan, staring at red C-list grapes on a wish list. And I was like, one day I'm going to be able to afford you, right? Now it's eggs. But no. So I get to help teachers. I get to arm them with business strategies that other people aren't talking about. We get really comfortable about talking about the worth. You know, as Jane Hossbrock says, we are brain surgeons by instruction.
Such a good quote. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Michelle. This has been such a fun and enlightening conversation. I appreciate everything that you had to share. Yeah. And happy Dyslexia Awareness
Month. I know. I was going to say, I know it's August that we're taping this. Happy Dyslexia Awareness Month, but let's not just make it a month.
Exactly. Yeah. Keep the awareness
all through the year.
The population is too big to...
Mm-hmm.
Right.
This is so true. This is so true.
Well, thank you so much again for
that. That was amazing. I'm so excited. So thank you.
Thank you so much for tuning into Literacy in Color. I hope today's episode left you feeling both inspired and equipped with something new to add to your teaching toolkit. If you're enjoying this podcast, it would truly mean so much to me if you'd leave a 5-star review. It helps other educators find the show and join our colorful community. And don't forget to hit the follow or subscribe button so you never miss an episode. For more tips, tools, and resources, be sure to check out the links in the show notes at michelleandthecolorfulclassroom.com. Thanks again for listening, and I'll catch you next week. Until then, be colorful and teach colorfully.